Slovenian soil. These are what many people call baby steps. That ideal you referred to, alluded to earlier, seems like we're, you know, quite a bit away. Yeah, we should be looking, how can we just flush this whole failed project down the drain? But apparently anything short of that, how do you gauge this slightly domino effect taking place in Europe?
Well, I think mostly politicians are really concerned about their own positions. And when their own public or their constituencies actually do start getting wind of the fact that all of their lies about human rights and about, democracy and freedom are basically being flushed down the loo when it comes to Israel, and that it's all basically hypocrisy and lies, that actually undermines the credibility of the political system here. I was just reading a headline during this week, and it said very clearly that nobody trusts politicians in Britain. I guess politicians generally aren't trusted, but now it's pretty abysmal that actually politicians have pretty much lost their credibility in their entirety just with their economic policies, which are destroying their own Western nations here because they're siding with neoliberal corporate companies. But add to this now this notion of this kind of vague notion that they had that the Western civilization was in some way the kind of messiah of real civilization and was trying to sort the whole world out and was the paragon of justice and paragon of freedom, and all of that is out the window. Now you've got 85-year-old women in Britain being arrested just because they have a placard saying they support Palestine Action, a group which takes on Israeli genocidal military companies, etc., based here in Britain. So it's falling apart. The kind of whole notion and the do-gooder West is falling apart in the minds of their own population. And I think the politicians are partly scared of that because they'll potentially lose votes around that. But also, I think that what they recognize is that where Israel is taking the world is basically lawlessness. There's no regard to international law by Israel, then what stops any other nation also saying, well, I don't care about international law either? If there's no regard to attacking sovereign nations preemptively, you know, without any provocation, then what stops other nations saying, look, we're going to go in and hit other countries? What Israel is doing is it's openly setting the bar so low now that others can also join in, and it's actually inciting war around the world. And what's worse is that these politicians aren't that stupid, that if they know once Iran, for instance, has been rattled by the Israelis, and nobody expected for them to go that far, but they have. And had it gone a little further, had the Iranians not given the Israelis such a bloody nose in a short space of time, the Israelis could have provoked Iran into shutting down the Hormuz Straits, which would have meant an entire global economic meltdown, a spiraling inflation, spiraling chaos and migration around the world. And Israel really almost didn't care. It seemed like they didn't care what they were doing, and it's still not over. They still very likely will try to go for Iran again. So the world is not going to be left unaffected by what Israel's doing. And I think that's also sinking in to a lot of the politicians around the globe. And so they've got to come up with a more robust plan of how do you stop a rogue nation which is completely out of control, is nuclear armed, and has access to all of the surveillance technology which makes them able to penetrate every other nation's intelligence services, every other nation's government infrastructure. Nobody's safe. The Mossad, Unit 8200, are capable of infiltrating any one of these nations, and they can blackmail, as you've seen with the Epstein case, which is all going on. Any nation, any leader can be compromised by their surveillance mechanisms. And I think that is also scaring a lot of nations. Yes, and of course, with the backdrop of China and Russia and the Eurasian axis, alternative possibilities, of course, this is making a lot of instability.
Thank you, Sid. I want to get the same question to you, Paul. When the U.S. calls Irish leadership about this anti-Israel bill, you very well know the financial fallout is not what's at concern here from the Irish not buying Israeli settler products. That's not the main concern, is it? It's the fear of a domino effect of precedent. And in fact, here it is. I searched it earlier. So the U.S. has voiced concerns that the bill could have unintended consequences and harm, this is a funny part here, both Israelis and Palestinians. However, Amnesty International has urged Ireland to stay firm in its commitment to justice and pass this bill, arguing it will set a strong example for other EU member states, Paul?
I don't know how strong an example it is. It's an example for sure, but the United States, we don't have statesmen, statespersons, and people who are looking out for the United States itself. And this is true in other countries. I would say the same with respect to Britain, France, and Germany, and other countries as well, that are not paying attention to what is in their real and immediate and long-term benefit. Because, as Saif pointed out, the Israelis do not care if there is a world war, if half the world is living under a nuclear cloud. Because they're thinking only about their own survival as a Zionist Jewish nation armed to the teeth, but they don't have the means. They're not big enough to impose directly their will upon other nations and other peoples. So they rely upon this. They don't care about closing the Strait of Hormuz or any of this. All they know that they can get whatever they want whenever they want it. And for the rest of the world, the United States especially, to go along with this, understanding how far they can be led by the nose, is just absurd. And it's and we have no people with. Take our president, Donald Trump. He doesn't think in those terms. He thinks in terms of how can we impose our will today on country A or tomorrow on country B and all this sort of thing. That's all he thinks about. He thinks about his future support within the government and within the country and how he's going to. He and his cronies are going to make money out of all of this, which they certainly can out of more weapons manufacturing. I think we have to think about what's in our immediate future, not our long-term future.
Always even. A pleasure, gentlemen. Thank you both for joining us on the program. There, Paul Lurie, co-founder of the Free Palestine Movement, joining us from Northern California in the States, and Saeed Mohsen Abbas, journalist and political commentator, joining us out of London, the United Kingdom. And this brings us to the end of your Spotlight program. Thank you for joining us, and bye-bye for now.
From east to west, throughout the vast land of Iran, you're listening to IRIB English Radio.
Good day to all of our listeners. This is Iran Radio. It's 12 noon here in Tehran, and I'm your presenter for the next hour. We start off this hour's programs with our varied radio productions feature. Then it's time for Around the World with Reporters. Listen to fascinating reports from all over the globe as reporters tell us what is happening in their corner of the world. Our radio productions feature will again follow after this. And we round up this hour's programs with Ulama's speech. Stay with us for this hour.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pourreza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahan Abbott, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
In the midst of hunger, shelling, and displacement, many in the Sudanese capital Khartoum still find time to follow the world beyond Tehran's resoluteness against Israel in a region where others have chosen silence or normalization with the oppressive regime is sparking something deeper here in Sudan. It's personal. This is the same city where, after the 1967 Arab-Israeli war, leaders gathered and declared the three no's, no peace, no recognition, and no negotiations with Israel. That legacy still lingers in the hearts of many Sudanese, not just as a political stance, but as a matter of principle and pride. Despite the struggle for daily survival, from finding food to fleeing violence, Sudanese civilians remain emotionally engaged in what they see as a larger fight for justice. The cause of Palestine still holds symbolic weight, and Iran's bold posture doesn't go unnoticed. Just as Israel is seen as an occupying force in Palestine, the RSF is seen here as an internal invader, a militia turning cities into battlefields. For people caught between rappel and ration lines, resistance anywhere feels like something worth noticing.
We followed closely the missiles Iran launched at Israel to defend itself, which is a legitimate right. Israel is supported by countries like the U.S. and European countries.
We followed the Israeli attacks on Iran, a sovereign and respected country. This aggressive regime has oppressed the Islamic nation and the Palestinian people. I pray that Allah grants victory to both Iran and the Islamic nations.
Even in a city scarred by war, the echoes of international struggle still reach deeply. Iran's actions remind many Sudanese that silence isn't the only option. Dignity, even under siege, can still speak and be heard. Here in Khartoum, the war is local, but the struggle feels global. As Iran stands its ground and asserts its influence, many Sudanese see a mirror of their own fight, a people refusing to accept silence or submission. Abdullah Hussein, Khartoum.
Foreign journalists walking through the ruins of residential neighborhoods, witnessing the human cost of war firsthand. Each destroyed home telling a story. Personal belongings buried beneath the rubble, lives forever changed, and families left shattered in the wake of Israeli missile strikes. One of the hardest hit areas on June 15th was Tehran's Tajrish Square, normally a busy shopping hub.
The innocent blood that was shed will never be forgotten. We will never forgive or forget these atrocities.
Traffic CCTV footage released a week later captured two powerful explosions. The first struck the upper floors of a building. The second hit the street, rupturing a main water pipeline and sending debris flying across the square. Vehicles hurled into the air. The blast left behind scenes of chaos. At least 12 civilians killed and more than 50 injured. Amid the devastation, residents rushed to help one another, pulling the wounded to safety from the flooded, debris-strewn streets.
We had to act quickly to minimize the damage. After the explosions, the street was left with a massive crater and severe flooding.
Local residents and shopkeepers recounting the harrowing moments, the deafening sound of the blast, the frantic rush to find shelter, and the heartbreak of returning to shattered homes, destroyed storefronts, and neighbors who never made it back.
We invited you here to witness the scale of destruction caused by the Israeli regime, so you can be a voice for the war crimes committed against the Iranian people. No awakened soul or conscience can accept this level of disregard for human rights.
The tour then moves to Tehran's Narmak neighborhood, where a university professor, labeled by the enemy as a nuclear scientist, was targeted in his own home. The attack claimed the lives of the professor's entire family and several neighbors. Now the residence lies in ruins, reduced to rubble. And what remains is a sobering scene, a stark reminder of the human cost behind what Israel describes as targeted assassinations.
It's very disturbing to see all these belongings to the children, like the school books, the plays they have, and to see like they are completely innocent and why they got killed. I mean, even the scientist also, he was not working on any atomic bomb. He was working on civilian nuclear facilities. So this is against the Convention of Geneva to attack civilians.
Through every stop, foreign journalists hear firsthand the voices of survivors, and they view evidence that directly contradicts Israeli claims of avoiding civilian targets.
visiting more bombed homes, the foreign journalists witnessed the true human toll of the Israeli aggression, the devastating reality of the suffering of civilians. Gisum Shahmadi, Tehran.
More than 170 civil society organizations joined a massive pro-Palestinian rally in Dublin on Saturday. Protesters strongly condemned the Israeli regime and its Western backers, accusing them of enabling genocide in Gaza.
They're attacking with high-precision military equipment that they're getting from the United States, and what's now being accepted as just normal international behavior means that we have people who are being dehumanized and demonized if they try to defend themselves.
Campaigners are calling for immediate sanctions on Tel Aviv and a total ban on the use of Irish airspace for the transfer of lethal weapons to Israel.
International law is there for a reason. So Israel needs to adhere to international law. That's all we're asking for. Please adhere to international law. And if everyone done that, we wouldn't have ended up here in the first place.
Official figures indicate that nearly 59,000 Palestinians, mostly women and children, have been killed by Israeli forces since October 2023. The real death toll is likely far higher. Meanwhile, famine is now imminent. The long-anticipated Occupied Territories Bill is expected to be introduced in Ireland this September. If passed, the legislation would ban trade with companies operating in illegal Israeli settlements.
In recent days, high-profile political figures in the United States have been mounting pressure on the Irish government to scrap the bill, threatening negative economic consequences if it goes ahead. But these activists are demanding that political leaders here do not capitulate to that pressure. Jerome Hughes, Dublin.
The echoes of the Iran-Iraq war still speak through walls. At Tehran's Holy Defense Museum, a delegation of foreign journalists walks through the scenes of sacrifice, endurance, and defiance. An immersive journey into the eight-year imposed war, where a nation bled but never broke.
Quite striking what they did, try to capture the atmosphere of how it was, and also to show it to other people who didn't went through the war, who didn't live through the war, and don't have actual account of it. So it's pretty amazing what they've done.
The Holy Defense Museum in Tehran stands as both a memorial and a mirror of Iran's resilience.
The first impression upon entering this museum is a deep sense of the Iranian people's extraordinary resilience and unwavering determination. Despite enduring severe hardships during the eight-year war, when virtually the entire world stood against Iran, they persevered. Even in the challenging years following the revolution, Iran managed to overcome immense obstacles, ultimately emerging victorious and displaying remarkable strength.
From reconstructed front lines to artifacts of fallen soldiers, the museum offers more than history. It conveys a message that victory comes not just through arms, but through faith and national unity. The journalists listening closely as the guides explain how the Iranian people, civilians and soldiers alike, stood shoulder to shoulder to defend their homeland. The experience led the visiting journalists to draw powerful parallels between Iran's wartime past and its present-day resistance to foreign aggression.
Things like peace through strength and, you know, peace through war, all this just nonsense. It's nonsense. And what I'm taking from this museum is Iran never sought out war or aggression upon anyone. And all of the war, the imposed wars upon Iran, they never sought that out. It was imposed upon them by imperial powers.
As far as these foreign journalists are concerned, the museum underscores how, for Iranians, defending the homeland is deeply rooted in their faith, culture, and collective identity.
Here, the visiting journalists see not only the scars of war, but the unity, resilience, and overwhelming faith that has led to the victory of the Iranian nation. Gisum Shahmadi, Tehran.
Uh,
Italy's former prime minister and opposition five-star movement leader Giuseppe Conte has accused Giorgia Meloni's far-right government of violating international norms by maintaining military ties with the Israeli regime.
Si chiama genocidio.
What is happening in Gaza goes under the name of genocide. The genocidal intent is evident. Italy's government has made a mockery of the country by not requesting any sanctions against Israel. We expected you to at least tear up this memorandum, as Italy's military ties effectively support violations of human rights and international norms. How do you intend to continue importing weapons from Israel? This is an act that makes you complicit in the violation of international law.
Conte's remarks came after Italy's Chamber of Deputies rejected a motion by opposition parties, five-star movement, the Democratic Party, Greens and Left Alliance, and Italian Socialist Party, to suspend a 25-year-old Italy-Israel Memorandum of Understanding by 142 votes to 102. The memorandum revolves around Rome and Tel Aviv cooperation in the military sector. On June 8, while the Israeli regime's genocide in Gaza continued to escalate, Italy's government renewed its military cooperation agreement with Tel Aviv. This memorandum of understanding, in place since 2005, is automatically renewed every 5 years, unless one of the two parties explicitly decides to suspend or terminate it. In late May, in response to the regime's ongoing genocide in Gaza, the regional governments of Puglia and Emilia-Romagna formally severed all institutional ties with the Israeli regime. Italy's national government has not even been able to speak a word of solidarity for the thousands of civilian Gazans slaughtered by war criminal Benjamin Netanyahu.
C'è una sudditanza che giustifica.
Italy is utterly subjugated to Israel. We keep supplying Tel Aviv with military materials, including ammonium nitrate and tritium, and importing weapons from Israel. The amount of arms we imported tripled in 2024 compared to the year before.
Our motion was a strong message given by all opposition forces in the face of Netanyahu's brutal attacks that continue to kill Gazans and hitting even a Catholic church in the strip. Our government must condemn once and for all Israelis' extermination of Palestinians.
Italy is the third Israeli regime's arms supplier following the US and Germany. Max Civili, Rome.
Dozens gathered on Khalid bin al-Walid Street in Damascus, rejecting Israeli aggression and expressing firm support for Syria's unity. The strikes, which hit near residential areas, were seen as a provocation aimed at deepening internal strife. Protesters raised Syrian flags and voiced rejection of sectarianism, foreign plots, and war. Many see the airstrikes as part of a wider plan to reignite conflict and shatter the country's fragile recovery. Chants echoed through the streets. No to treason, no to foreign intervention. Protesters called for civil peace and solidarity with Soweda, vowing to defend every inch of Syrian territory against division and outside manipulation. From Damascus to Soweda, Syrians are speaking in one voice. No to war, no to division. As Israeli airstrikes try to fracture the country, citizens respond with defiance and unity stronger than ever. Ali Mohammed, Damascus.
His name may not have made headlines, but to those who knew him, Hajj Ramazan was a legend. Now, in the wake of his martyrdom, an entire nation commemorates the life and sacrifice of Major General Mohammad Said Izadi, known by friends and peers as Hajj Ramazan.
He dedicated over 35 years of his life to the Palestinian resistance. He was a key figure in supporting Palestine, as he was head of the division in charge. His unwavering commitment shaped the resistance movement and earned him respect for his dedication to the Palestinian cause.
A key force behind Iran's support for Palestine, he was revered for his humility. His martyrdom in the recent Israeli aggression has drawn widespread condemnation and renewed vows to carry forward his mission. A special tribute video played during the memorial left many in attendance deeply moved, as they admitted they had never realized just how instrumental Haj Ramazan was in support for the Palestinian resistance.
Those who support Israel are stabbing Palestine in the back, and those who martyr the supporters of the resistance are betraying Palestine. What this revered martyr left behind is a legacy of resistance. We must keep his memory alive by continuing his path in the fight against oppression. What better honor than to sacrifice for this valuable cause?
This memorial affirms a collective vow to preserve the memory of martyr Haj Ramazan and continue his unwavering support for the resistance, echoing across generations and all who stand for justice.
Honoring this revered martyr, his steadfast commitment to defending and supporting Palestine inspires continued resistance. Gisumi Shahmadi, Tehran.
Children more. On September 17, 2024, in towns across southern Lebanon and in parts of Syria, a new kind of terror was unleashed. At around 3:30 in the afternoon, small black pagers began exploding inside homes, markets, and schools.
In Lebanon, at least 12 people were killed, over 2,800 injured Tuesday, when electronic pagers used by members of Hezbollah exploded at the same time.
Playing out hundreds of times across Lebanon within the space of an hour, a targeted, coordinated, highly technical attack.
And hospitals struggling with an influx of more than 3,000 injured people.
The next day, it was walkie-talkies.
Dozens of radios exploded earlier today.
Walkie-talkies explode throughout Lebanon over the course of 2 days.
What followed was a two-month Israeli bombardment campaign. Thousands were killed, a fifth of Lebanon's population displaced. And the community, seen as the backbone of Hezbollah, the Shia population of southern Lebanon, was bombed, hunted, and left to bury its dead. Israel was trying to deter Hezbollah from intervening against the genocide in Gaza. Later, it would be revealed that the pagers were booby-trapped, sold to Hezbollah by a front company tied to the Mossad, Israel's intelligence agency. The Israelis named the operation Grim Reaper. They claimed they were targeting fighters, but these are the people who paid the price.
We're leaving Berish, a village in South Lebanon. We were just visiting Ali, one of the victims of the pager attacks, and we're on our way to Dibba, another village, to visit Hussein, who's also a victim. He's 12 years old of the pager attacks. These kids, their lives have been completely upended. Lots of facial disfiguration. They've lost fingers. Many of them can't see. So yeah, it's quite heavy stuff.
As a doctor, somehow you are trained to dissociate yourself from this compassion with the patient, but it fails many times. When you see your young people coming to you, this is the future of your country. Perhaps your kids, your neighbor, your parents, you see them. It's very hard to dissociate yourself. They were part of my Lebanon, my dream. And taking care of them, I'm reconstructing, rebuilding my country.
Ali and Hussein are more than survivors. They're friends, and in each other, they find a reflection of what they've lost and what they still have. The Israelis insist they were targeting fighters. So why were so many civilians, including children, among the injured? Zainab Mistra was injured by a pager at her parents' house in the southern suburbs of Beirut. Human rights lawyer Craig McIver says the attacks on Lebanese civilians were no accident.
Many of those who were victimized by these attacks were civilians, were women and children, medical workers and others. And even some of those who were targeted were not combatants. They may have been affiliated with Hezbollah, but mere affiliation with a political organization does not make someone a legitimate target under international law.
Sheikh Mustafa Shaib, a religious scholar, was also badly injured in the attack.
All of it was a part of a campaign of terror against certain parts of the Lebanese population for a political purpose. So it clearly meets the general understanding of what terrorism is. It constitutes an act of aggression.
We're in Burj Rahal in South Lebanon, and we're heading to Sheikh Mustafa's house, where he lives with his wife and two young daughters.
Sheikh Mustafa is a teacher, a father, and a scholar. He isn't a fighter. But on September 17, 2024, a pager exploded in his hands. Now he's blind. Sheikh Mustafa teaches at a religious school in South Lebanon that's affiliated with the political wing of Hezbollah. Hezbollah was formed in the early 1980s to resist Israel's invasion and occupation of Lebanon. It liberated the South in 2000 and beat back another Israeli invasion in 2006. After that humiliation, Israel began planning the next round.
The pager attack was part of that plan. Like other Lebanese political parties, Hezbollah runs schools, clinics, and infrastructure for the constituency that voted them into parliament. The pagers were a basic tool, a secure means of communication across the community, until Israel turned them into weapons. Weapons that turned people into bombs. The blast left him completely blind. His face was torn apart. He's undergone dozens of surgeries. When he got prosthetic eyes, his daughters thought he could see again. He had to explain that he couldn't. Israel's pager attack was practically celebrated across the West. The media called it sophisticated. American officials hailed it as precise and targeted.
Wolf, indeed, the Mossad has a long, fascinating history of using methods like this, the latest in a long line of audacious, lethal, sometimes high-tech operations by the legendary Israeli intelligence agency, Mossad.
The Israelis are the best.
Today, they look like James Bond, carrying out an attack in Lebanon.
Targeting and eliminating membership and leadership of Hezbollah, I absolutely support that. In fact, if anything, I love it.
Israeli leaders and their supporters take pride in the attack and have often turned it into a joke, handing out pager trophies to political allies and threatening to use pagers against their adversaries while mocking victims as their bodies undergo surgery after surgery.
I'm a supporter of the Palestinians, so I'm used to it.
Yeah, I hope your beeper doesn't go off. The thing is
that... Did you just say I should die?
Beep, beep.
Former Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett joked that he planned to pass out pagers to students protesting his appearance at Harvard University. Supporters of Israel joked about giving a pager to Mahmoud Khalil's newborn baby after he was detained by ICE over his opposition to the genocide in Gaza. The Mossad agents who engineered the attack were praised as national heroes in Israel and given airtime in Western media to justify it.
That although it's ugly, it has character.
And yet if you were to tune in to the broadcast of the media corporations in the United States or listen to American politicians, you would think that Israel had achieved something great, that it was some sort of precision strike against the bad guys, when in fact, it was an atrocity.
Craig McIver is the former director of the New York office of the UN Commissioner for Human Rights. He resigned in October 2023 in protest of the UN's failure to stop Israel's genocide in Gaza. While Western media celebrated the attack, Craig had a different name for it.
But what we saw with the use of these pagers was a clear and gross violation of international law. It could certainly be defined as terrorism because it was intended to spread terror across the population in Lebanon.
Even former CIA Director Leon Panetta framed it the same way.
Is it terrorism?
I don't think there's any question that it's a form of terrorism.
Under international law, the pager attack checks nearly every box for illegality.
The booby trapping of ordinary civilian devices is prohibited in all circumstances. That is a war crime in and of itself. It doesn't meet the test of international humanitarian law of the principle of distinction, that is, being able to distinguish between combatants and non-combatants. It is a violation of the principle of precaution. It also is a violation of international human rights law that prohibits arbitrary, summary, or extrajudicial executions.
And even if Israel's claims were true, that all the pagers belonged to Hezbollah fighters, Craig says the attack would still be a war crime.
Neither can they claim that some of those who were killed were victims of so-called collateral damage. A child who was killed by an exploding pager is not the victim of collateral damage. They are the victim of a war crime.
For the victims, there's no confusion about who helped and who harmed. While the U.S. sent weapons and shielded Israel diplomatically, Iran sent doctors, planes, and medical care free of charge. The attack's cruelty extended beyond the initial blast. Lebanese MP Ilyas Jradi, an ophthalmologist who treated many of the victims, described what followed as a corneal siege, an effort to prevent Hezbollah members and their communities from accessing critical eye surgeries. Meanwhile, the U.S. and Israel pressured the Lebanese government to ban Iranian planes from landing in Beirut, making the journey for pager attack victims seeking medical care even more difficult. Sheikh Mustafa wasn't alone. Zainab Mestrah was injured by a pager as well, and she's no fighter either. She's an interior designer and an event planner. The unprecedented and lawless nature of this attack has unleashed a new uncertain era of warfare for the whole world.
And when you have terror going into the supply chain, it makes people ask the question, what the hell is next?
What now is to stop anyone in the world from booby trapping anything in the supply chain, food products, for example, water, ordinary household devices, any of those can now be used as a booby trap in order to target people that are deemed to be the enemy by any state, by any armed group, by any actor on the planet. And you have to ask yourself, what would drive a state to be so bold in its blatant violation of international law? Impunity of the state of Israel has been guaranteed for 8 decades by the West, United Kingdom, the United States, Germany, and others. And the product of impunity is always more violations, worse violations, expanding circles of atrocity.
Militarily, these attacks exacted a heavy human toll. But politically, if Israel thought the bombs would fracture loyalties and erode the base of support for Hezbollah in South Lebanon, that seems unchanged. If anything, it appears to have hardened the commitments of those who bore the brunt of the attack.
Try to follow the signs. That's how I live my life. Cause when I lead it, my heart, it all goes wrong. My journey has been on time, but only for a short while. The road that I've been on is far too long, and the picture's never clear.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Here we enlighten you with ayahs 261 and 262 from the Surah Baqarah, recited by Ali Parhiskar.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most compassionate. The parable of those who spend their property in the way of Allah is as the parable of a grain growing 7 years, with 100 grains in every ear. And Allah multiplies for whom He pleases, and Allah is ample giving, knowing. As for those who spend their property in the way of Allah, then do not follow what they have spent with reproach or injury. They shall have their reward from their Lord, and they shall have no fear, nor shall they grieve.
Good morning to all our listeners. You are tuning to Iran radio broadcast from Tehran. Here are some interesting facts about Islam. The Islamic world produced the first skilled, specially trained pharmacists who made their own medicines and worked closely with medical doctors and physicians. A 13th century Islamic writer described the circulation of blood inside the human body some 400 years before this was discovered in Europe.